Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Ah, podcast time. And this week, I've got my homie Andy from Shermanology. We couldn't get his sister Dorothy on, so just got one half of Shermanology. I've known them both for a few years now. I've worked on a couple of records that still haven't been released. One of them's coming out this year called Searching, and the record called Father is coming out next year. But I absolutely love these guys. Andy, I've kind of worked with him more than Dorothy, but I have this just great relationship with Andy, and I love him to bits. He's one of the nicest guys, been through a lot in the industry, and at this moment in time I've seen it happen in the last couple of years, just things kind of build and build and build. They've just released a record called Boys in the Club, which is this amazing, like, groovy, like, it's almost like New York-y kind of hip house vibe with like Caribbean-y influence, and you'll hear all about that in the podcast. It's on their own record label called Dope that they've launched. Yeah, it's just I just love these guys so much. I've got so much time for them. So without further ado, Shermanology. I see you got the coffee ready.
Oh man,
you got the top hat on, and you got the glasses on.
It's my third one. Now that you know,
we know it's a Saturday morning when this is happening. What's going on, man?
Yeah, good. It's just, as you can see, I'm all covered up because I've been having these late night studio sessions till like in the morning. And it's something new, because before that, I was like only sitting in the studio until like 10. But then suddenly I was like, no, my music needs something darker. So I think we need to shift the time.
Do you find it helped? Or do you just find you're more tired?
Yeah, you know what the thing is? Like, because we're not DJing,
yeah,
I wake up at 6 in the morning. So at 7, I'm sitting in front of my screen.
Yeah.
And then I carry on until 10, 11 at night. And then at a certain point, you're like, bro, you've been sitting here for 16 hours. What do you expect?
Yeah.
Do you expect inspiration to come like this? Sometimes it works. But sometimes you just have to like be like, brother, let's just have fun with it. If I go till late at night, then that's what it is.
Yeah,
I can just see as it comes.
I haven't been writing for myself for over a month now. I've been like doing sessions with other people and like writing music for other people and kind of like writing some pop stuff for other people and just like getting out of my head of trying to write Will Clark music. And then also I like refurbed my studio and kind of changed it up. It hasn't been changed in like 9 years, and now I'm just like loving life. And I got in the studio yesterday for the first time and was like doing a Zoom session with one of my friends, and yeah, I just like felt like I could write techno again.
Yeah, but you have to change the scenery. It's so stupid, but just putting a desk and some plants and stuff like that made such a difference for the state of mind.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's weird though, because you'd think, I guess it's just we live off change. Our lives are always changing all the time, just purely because we're always on the road. We're meeting new people. We're in different settings all the time, and now it's just like same four walls, baby.
That's it. And you feed off energy. So when you get a lot of inspiration, it's because you feel energy of other people and you get inspired by stuff. And with all that just falling away, you have to find your inspirations from different kind of places. So I get you.
Yeah.
Get out there, make some pop music, you know, just be musical and just see where the mind goes.
Yeah, man. Whereabouts are you in the world right now?
At home in Amsterdam. Back in Amsterdam.
How is it?
To be honest, I went to the Caribbean for a couple of months.
Yeah, I saw that.
Just to change scenery and be more with my dad and just, you know, go back
home.
Is
that where your dad's from?
Yeah. Sick. Yeah. And I grew up over there.
Oh, amazing.
So when I was there, I was like, yes, this is more like the life I want to live.
Mm.
And then the COVID kicked in and all the numbers went up and they told everyone like, yo, guys, we're only an island from 150,000 people.
Yeah.
We have 1,000 cases a day.
Yeah.
So can we please let all the people that don't live here go back to their country, because they didn't have no more beds on the IC. So I was like, you know what, Andy, respect your country, respect what they're asking you. So I said, I'm going to go back home.
Yeah.
Stay here for a couple of months. And then when touring starts again, then I'm going to try and do more on that side of the ocean.
So are you going to try and move over there?
Not really move 100%. So when we do Europe, I want to keep Amsterdam as my base.
Yeah.
And when we do America and South America, I go back home. You know, that's the plan. You know how it goes in the mind. That's the plan.
Dude, I'm exactly the same. Like, I've been back home in the UK for, well, over a year now. And I'd spent a lot of my career in America and I love America. I've obviously got my place in Detroit and I absolutely love it. But I'm at the point now where I'm like, I kind of want to have like a place here, like a proper place, and kind of build some roots here again. Just because it's like, it's home, isn't it? There's nothing better than home.
Would you leave the US?
I'd always have a place there. I love touring in America. And I still feel like I want to do more in America and South America, and kind of it's just great to have a place there,
man.
And have a studio there and be able to like go tour for like 3 months and also live there and kind of get involved in the culture there and things like that. But I don't know, it's something about being back home in the UK. I haven't been like this for a while, like where I'm just like, I've always loved being at home. I live next door to my parents. Like, it's a great vibe, if you know what I mean. My brothers and sisters always come around. But it's just something about it that I just like, it just feels like a good time to just put some more roots down in the UK. Maybe I think what it is, I don't know for you, is it just like that, the COVID situation where it's like, makes you reevaluate life a little bit more and like where
exactly
you wanna be.
Exactly, because like my mom lives in Suriname, that's next to Brazil, and my dad lives in Curaçao, that's in front of Venezuela. And you know, the last 10 years or even longer, I've been only chasing my dream. You know, and chasing your dream is good, but there's so much more, because when this dream fades or you achieve whatever, if you didn't work on the rest of your life, then you're gonna be miserable. You know, I've seen so many guys with so much money having success, and when they have to do a family barbecue or a friend barbecue, he has to ask other DJs to come around because he doesn't have any friends. You know what I mean? So I'm like, focus on friends and family and the things that matter too. Because otherwise, the balance is going to be totally off. Like today, my sister and my cousin, another friend, are going to stay over for 2 days. And we're just going to have a couple of days of just chilling, eating, and you know what I mean?
It's important, man. It's really, it is really important. I think we can live in this bubble, right, of DJs and music life, and it's not it is reality for us, but it's not real life, like at all. It's not real life at all. And kind of like, don't get me wrong, I don't know if I want the normality of 9-to-5 work, and I definitely don't want But you're right. I think it's really healthy to have relationships and friendships outside of music, and also it's not started through music. There's no like hidden agendas or anything like that. It's purely like authentic relationships.
Because you know what's mad? Because I've been sitting in the studio for the last years, like 16 hours a day. When I get in a situation where it's not music related, sometimes I get uncomfortable.
Okay.
Because I'm so used in only talking about music, doing music, that when the conversation switches, sometimes I'm like, I just want to go back to the studio. I don't want to be here. Yeah, it's you know, you get to that point, and I'm like, Andy, why are you running back to the studio? Just chill, disconnect sometimes, and that's where my
I hear you with that. I kind of do the opposite, where even my whole music career, I never like talking about music unless I'm with somebody that's in music. And I really struggle to talk. I don't know about you, but like when you're with your mates that aren't in music, like I don't like it when they ask me questions about my career.
Oh, me neither. Me neither.
What's that about, man?
Me neither. I'm like, no, I don't know. Because I'm so against bragging.
Yeah, same.
So when I start talking about what I'm doing, and I get the slightest feeling that it might be a bit, not bragging, but even the thought of someone thinking that it's bragging, I prefer to stop talking about it. And then when it comes out or something happens, then that's good, you know?
I totally agree. I'm like, switch it up. What, when you're on a plane, what do you say you do when you're, when you like talk to random people?
No, I don't even talk about that we're doing music. No.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like having that conversation of like, oh, so let me hear what you're making.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck.
No,
that.
No.
Have you ever been in Uber and they're like, I hate it when this happens. When you kind of like get talking to an Uber driver and then they're like, oh yeah, I'm like a rapper or I'm a producer. And then they start playing their music. And I'm like, it's the most uncomfortable feeling in the fucking world.
What are you supposed to say? If it's not, but you know, if you're not, I never discourage anyone.
No, never.
Never. If bro, if you like it and you believe it, there must be a market for it. So I'm like, well, yeah. But yeah, it's weird sometimes.
Yeah, there's some ego, man, is a hell of a thing. Ego in people is wild, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, it's great.
It kind of keeps the world going, but it also like slows things down so much just purely because of someone's ego.
I think ego is the biggest problem in the world.
Yeah.
Like even sometimes when I catch myself like giving a reaction. Because, like, your music is your passion. It's your baby. So when people are not fair or trying to push through a deal that doesn't make any sense, sometimes I get quite snappy.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, no, Andy, no ego. Not from their side, not from your side. And once you get to know for yourself how many times ego is the problem. And it doesn't have to be like the big ego that everyone thinks, but just a little bit of ego in your head or in the other person's head that you're doing business with can mess up so much. I've seen so many deals go bad because of ego and managers and stuff like that, that I'm like, yo, guys, if you get the deal straight from the start, that everyone knows what they're working for and everything is fair, then there's no ego.
Totally,
you know, man. But when things get complicated, that's something that I'm like, yo, guys, come on now.
Yeah, it's rough, isn't it? Did you ever have a point in your career? Because I definitely have, where it's usually it was at the beginning of my career, mostly when you'd see people around you achieve things and you'd be like, why the fuck have they got that? Like, why can't I get this? Why am I not getting this? And a moment that really switched for me was when I can't remember how old I was. It was a few years ago. And I was just like, we're so happy for everyone around me to be successful and actually want to go out of my way to make people successful. And even if they're more successful than me, that makes me happy, if you know what I mean. And kind of being really happy for my friends to be smashing it. And like, if like my friend's record gets played on the radio and mine doesn't, I'm really genuinely happy for them. And I think that's what really helped me kind of maybe not like stress about my life as much and about my career, because I was just like, if I'm happy for everyone else, like, it made my life so much easier.
No, it definitely is, you know, because I mean, for our story, I've seen so many DJs around me just start after me and just pass me like with 300 miles per hour, you're like, boom. And as you said, in the beginning, you're like, no, but I'm working so hard to achieve it. And further down the line, I always said it, but I never understood that everyone has their own road.
Yeah, man.
And some people reach their destination in 1 year.
Yeah.
And within 2 years, they're done.
Yeah.
The other one, it takes 15 years to get there. But I mean, for me, at the point where we're at right now, we had like three or four years ago, I had the biggest dip ever musically. Yeah. I didn't know where I wanted to go. Mm. I wasn't happy with the stuff that we're doing. Neither was Dorothy. And we said, you know, we need to reset, start from scratch.
Yeah.
And from that point, I started to realize that, oh, now that I did like hip hop stuff for 3 years and Caribbean stuff I tried to produce for other people, and we did other electronic stuff. Now, the sound that we're making now is a combination of everything that I did in the last 10 years, even without having a plan, you know, just to make music. And once everything starts falling together, then you start to understand, okay, my road had to be that long.
Yeah.
For me to come to this place, because if I wasn't sitting in the studio and I didn't know how I was going to pay my bill this month and try to go back to my Caribbean roots, I would not have the songs that I have right now, because a lot of the songs are stuff that I wrote in the period that I was just having fun with music without a plan.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's the thing. And once you can be happy also for your friends, and you erase the space that normally used to fill up with ego and jealousy. Yeah. When you can take that away, everything will go your way, because that's what blocks the whole universe. The negativity, the jealousy, the envy.
Yeah, man. I totally agree. It was a strange time when, I don't know if you felt it, when kind of like shows started getting announced in around the world for after COVID, and you like saw lineups come out and things like that. And I had like a few DJ mates be like, one of my good mates, I won't say his name, but he was like, dude, why aren't you on these lineups? And I was like, we've got a plan. Like my team have got a plan. We've got one goal in mind, and we're sticking to our plan no matter what. Just because we've been not working for over a year, like. And he's like, oh, I just was like thinking, like, you didn't do any live streams, you haven't kind of done much during lockdown, and like been DJing much and things like that. Maybe like people won't book you, and I'm like, I don't care. That's not my plan. Is this mm-hmm. and I think this is if somebody said that to me 4 years ago, I would be like so mad, and I'd be like getting worried and getting like jealous of everyone and like seeing everyone come and like play these shows and things like that. And it's like, oh no, they've got their road, they've got their plan and what they're trying to get to. I've got mine, and we're sticking to what we want to do. And I think by accepting that your plan is for you, your path in this career is in this life is what you decide to do. And by doing that, it just alleviates so much stress.
Yeah.
So yeah, much.
But that's not, there's the only way you can achieve, I think, in this scene is to have a story and a plan of your own.
Yeah, man.
And it's hard. It's hard, especially when you see other people making moves. But in the end, when you get to that place where you want to be, they will say, okay, I'm really proud of you that you stick to your plan. Because when it's hard, nobody understands until you get where you want to be, you know? Yeah. But the only thing that I'm like, you have to stick to your plan, because within 10 years, when maybe we'll be doing something else, if I didn't achieve, I'm like, I did my plan.
Yeah.
But I do not want to get to a certain age where I feel like I've never did what I had in mind, and I only listened to managers, and I only listened to people in the scene. And in the end, a lot of times the artist knows what fits with their brand the most. Of course, you need a team to work it out, and it's all about team effort. But in the end, it's the vision that you have in mind. You have to set out the whole world.
Yeah, it's almost like not chasing somebody else's dream. Right, you have to kind of chase your own and kind of work for your own, because we could all have, there's a lot of people that are extremely successful in what they do, but they're always trying to be somebody else, like commercial guys trying to be super underground and cool, and super underground people trying to write commercial records and kind of be the big stars. And it's like, guys, you've got to pick what you want to do. You can do both. You can do all, but if you've got to make sure that's what your plan is. You can't just go from one thing to another. You have to actually do it fucking properly. And you've got to work it and build foundations and be the best at it as you possibly can.
Yeah, man, definitely. Especially when I see people, their plan coming along, I enjoy.
Yeah, man.
I enjoy the stubborn artist that everybody was like, no, and he just does it his way, and it works out.
You guys are there. You're like going through it. I've seen it from when did we start working together? Like write Father. No one has actually ever, well, people have heard it, but they don't know it's not out yet.
I think it's a year and a half ago.
I think it's longer.
Longer, yeah. Because I was in, you were touring. I think 2 years.
I think so.
Ooh.
Because we've been in COVID for a year, mate.
Yeah, then it's 2 years.
Yeah.
Then it's definitely 2 years,
And then you guys, it felt like you'd like just made your plan of like what you're kind of wanting to do and the direction that you wanted to take things. It just felt like you were just like, because obviously you had like a very successful past back in the day. And did you do like Avicii Records?
Yeah. The thing is with us, we started like with the housey stuff in Holland, and where we did the 3 minutes to explain with Fedder and Funkerman.
Yeah,
that was the first record.
Oh, Funkerman, I love that guy.
Yeah,
love that guy.
You know, and then Afrojack came along, because when the whole thing started, everything in Holland was house. Yeah. Like Afrojack's first release was on Defected.
Yeah.
The radio guy or whatever. So that was a period where everybody was doing the house stuff. And then at a certain point, Afrojack asked us for a vocal. So we wrote Can't Stop Me for him. And then Avicii asked for a vocal. No, Avicii was first. And then we gave him Blessed.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, we started touring and doing all the big shows. And but musically, Nick asked me, Afrojack, to sign with him. And I told him, yo, bro, we can sign, but I really want to keep the Sherman identity in what we're doing.
Yeah.
So that was the deal. And then we started releasing music, and I noticed that he wanted to shift us left in the direction of Black Eyed Peas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, we were doing the big shows, and I told Dorothy, yo, let's be honest. If the crowd wasn't standing in front of us, if you would take away the crowd, would you still play this song?
Yeah.
You know, and at a certain point, we're like, no, we cannot do a sound that we don't believe in. Because if I'm in a car, I don't play it. If I'm with friends, I don't play it. Hey, Dorothy, let's reset everything. Even though we were earning good money and doing big shows, musically, we were so unhappy without disrespecting anyone
of course
helped us along the way, you know, because I'm grateful. And even the EDM side is a side that I had to do to get where I am right now.
Yeah.
Because I know how I could always work a crowd with tracks that weren't EDM in the set, but still had energy to rock a big crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so yeah, at a certain point, we said, Dorothy, let's stop with everything. Mm. We fired our agent. We fired management. We fired the whole thing. And everybody looked at us like, guys, are you guys okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, guys, it's going to take me at least 4 or 5 years to reset this thing. But let's take the risk. And then we started doing records for...
Can I go back to that? When you're like, okay, it's gonna take 4 to 5 years to build this shit up. Like, what's that feeling when you tell everyone, guys, we're quitting? Like, what is that feeling?
It's so hard.
Yeah.
Because you're saying no to a secure future.
Mm.
And that's the point where I was like, yo, you can keep on doing what you want and have financial independency,
yeah,
but be musically very unhappy, or do it again. Because I mean, we've been in the scene for more than 15 years,
yeah.
So you've seen the changes. It comes back around again. It changed it again. So the circle keeps coming back. And when I saw that the EDM was peaking, but it wasn't my home, I knew that 4 or 5 years later, house was going to come back in a way that it has to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I said, Dorothy, never mind the money. We will struggle. Let's go for the struggle. And a lot of people didn't know, but it was a real struggle that, you know, at a certain point I said, Dorothy, don't worry. Because the house scene wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for the house scene because I didn't know what sound I wanted to make to be different than what's, because there's no point in copying. So I said, Dorothy, doing house right now, let's do it on the side, but let's focus on writing songs for other people.
Yeah.
And then we started doing dance hall songs for Shaggy.
Oh, really?
For Quincy, for Bob Daddy's son.
Okay.
Called Quincy.
Yeah.
We did, I produced a record for him and Shaggy. I did dancehall stuff for Pato Ranking. I did like real Caribbean stuff, the dancehall. Like,
that's
and then
amazing.
I did that for a year and a half with a friend of mine called DJ Buddha, who does like the Latin kind of stuff. And then after writing all those songs, I was like, okay, now we're doing the pop side just to get our Caribbean flavors out.
Yeah,
because I was like, I want to do that Caribbean stuff, but I don't want to do it in a cheesy way. I wanted it to be dance hall, like when I was a kid standing on a dance floor and the bass just, that's what I want to recreate. Yeah. So I started doing that and we started writing records like hard on dance hall stuff. Mm. And then when we did that for like 2 years and we had an arsenal like on vocals, I was like, okay, and now I want to try and make this stuff house.
Yeah.
And that's when I took the Urban Records and started like remixing our own stuff. And that's how I found the sound that we're doing right now, like the Caribbean, but still house mixed up. Yeah. So that was the whole journey.
That's cool, man. That's cool. And I guess like going back to when you were like, I'm out of this EDM kind of scene. Like, when you were like, okay, it's done, it's out, was that a nice feeling? Because I guess the thing is that I'm like, I've had situations like that where I've like sat down, I left management and I've sat down with myself and was like, what do I actually want out of this? Like, where do I want to be? Who do I want? When someone sees Will Clark on a lineup, what do I want them to think? And when I worked that out, because it changes, right? Those things change in your life. And at the beginning of my touring career, it was like, I want to be part of Dirty Bird. I want to be like the man in Dirty Bird. And then it got to the point where I was like, okay, I don't want that anymore. I can't go any further in that. So what do I need now? I want to create my own thing. And that's when All We Have Is Now started. But for me, having Ryan, my manager, like it was like super key to have the right person around me and the right team around me to help achieve that. When did you get to the point where you're at what now, where it's like we need somebody else to kind of work with us and kind of help us achieve where we want to get to? Or are you on your own
in this whole journey? I focused on two things because I knew that I had to work on a sound that stood for what Dorothy and I stand for. But I knew that I also had to work on the spiritual side and the music side, like business-wise. So I started reading books like Think and Grow Rich. And I started reading things like The Power of Now.
Okay.
For me to find a balance between everything that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So when I read The Power of Now, the Think and Grow Rich, it kept telling me, make a team of people that you think you miss quality-wise, but get the best of the best, And then I came in touch with Mano, our manager, and he approached us at a time that we were like on our lowest.
Yeah.
And I played him in my house stuff and he was like, Andy, I really want to work with you guys. I believe in this thing. And there were no bookings. So I was like, a manager who believes in the sound without knowing when his first paycheck is going to come is the kind of guy I can work with.
Yeah,
and we started working and it clicked so good. He had a similar vision. And for the label, I had this guy called Dan Carter who did our management in 2015 for a year. And I met him while he was writing up blogs and doing stuff like that in 2009 and we always stayed in touch and it was such a good connection. And when I started like building the whole new team, I said, I want to work with the people who work with me when I was at my lowest.
Yeah.
I don't want no manager to like, oh shit, you're going to earn so much this year. Let me say 20%. Yes. I want to work with you.
Yeah.
No, so that's why I decided, we need to build a team who understands what we stand for. And that's what we did in the last couple of years, and now the first track came out on our label, The Boys in the Club. And we're just building everything that I have in mind that I want to start building. I'm doing, we started our own publishing company with Warner Brothers that we set up this year, where we signed like 7 songwriters and we're doing the label and we're going to start doing the parties, but everything step by step. Because it's if you have a vision in your mind, just get the people to build your team that you can reach your vision, but with a team that understands what your destination is. I think that's
it's amazing, man. I also think it's about having people in the team that everyone else has a vision as well for their lives, right? Everyone else has. So like, I talk about this a lot with my manager, is like, what is it that he wants? What does he want to get out of all of this? Mm-hmm. And what's his plan? Because I want his plan to fit in with my plan, so that maybe his plan is to kind of build a huge management company. It's not, but maybe it is to build a huge management company with loads of managers, mm-hmm. and loads of artists. So how do we get that as well? How do we get that for him, using my career as well, and using his experience in the career in music industry? And I think that's the thing, is having people that actually both of your or all of your kind of dreams and goals in life is kind of works together, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's so connected. People a lot of times see everything separate, but when one of those things is out of balance, it can mess up everything else in your whole ecosystem.
Yeah.
You know?
No, man. And it goes back to ego again. It goes back to that first thing that we were talking about, is that if you're like kind of selfish and not taking their lives and their families and their friends and their relationships and their goals and dreams into account, you're not going to have a strong team.
Never.
And you're not going to get to where you want to get to as in your career. And this isn't just in music, this is in life. It's with everything. If you run a company and you don't look after the employees, and or you have a relationship and you don't look after and you don't kind of like nurture that relationship, it's not going to go anywhere.
Bro, I so agree with you. And the I've seen so many big artists treat their team as shit,
yeah,
because they think they're the big star.
Mm.
And in the end, bro, your company will not function if you don't have a happy team.
Yeah.
And then again, it's egos, because he thinks like, I'm the big man. And, you know, and that's something that I've been working on. I mean, sometimes because it's your product, when someone tells you something that you're not, that you don't agree with, you can get that attitude like, no, but I think it's like this.
Mm.
And that's the power. Take a step back, really listen to what the person says, you know, and have a conversation instead of it being a one-way street. Yeah, it's all about keeping the team happy and let them feel respected too. Because if you have a manager who's like, yo, bro, I can't even give you feedback because you're not open for feedback, then how are we going to improve the company?
Yeah, and vice versa. If you can't challenge your manager, if you can't challenge the team around you and be like, no, I don't agree with this, and be able to have a healthy relationship of disagreement. Disagreement is so key.
Bro, people have to understand that.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's nothing wrong with a healthy discussion, you know? And I mean, from the two cultures that I know, like I have my culture from Suriname and Curacao.
Yeah.
And I have my Dutch culture.
Mm.
when, I mean, with all due respect, my people from the Caribbean, it's hard to have a discussion.
Okay.
Because we're so snappy
yeah.
that it becomes almost a big argument in a matter of a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And then, yes, because there's so much emotion and fire so in everything that we do.
Yeah.
And then you have the Dutch who can tell you that you're the biggest thief in the world. And he's just sitting, chilling and selling you with the biggest smile on his face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, I love it.
And that's the balance. I mean, you have to keep the fire. But when people are having like discussions, don't let the emotions let you take over. Mm. Just, you know, and that's the balance that I think is life.
Oh, man, we see it so often. I do anyway. People reacting on emotion rather than like sitting back and evaluating. And Twitter is that whole thing. Twitter is mm-hmm. just, Twitter is everyone reacting on emotion. Because you see one thing that fucking makes you go crazy and bam, respond to it.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a wild time at this moment in time. But I think if everybody could learn to see something, go through the emotion yourself, maybe talk to somebody close to you, and then respond after you've kind of felt about like and thought about it and gone through those feelings, the response is going to be much healthier for everyone.
I think we should have like an email or a Twitter lock. Like if someone posted, you can't reply within 1 hour. You need to wait. Have to think about it and then come back.
I totally agree. I totally agree, man. Because it's like when you're drunk and or like off your head and you like text your ex-partner or something like that. You just like
it's
you
the know, same thing.
It's the same. Oh man, it's the worst.
Oh, crazy.
We've all done it.
Oh man, I'm the worst. I'm telling you, I'm the worst because my emotions run up so high sometimes that Dorothy's like, Andy, come on. Mm. Come on. Sometimes I reply shit back and I didn't even read the email right.
Yep.
Like, bro.
Yeah, it's so bad. So bad.
But it's all part of the whole thing.
It's life process, right?
Yes, it is.
It's life process. And as long as you're self-aware and you can actually process yourself and be like, oh, I did that wrong. I can't do that in future.
Yes, that's the key.
Yeah. That process is so hard to get to, though.
It is.
I love it. I love seeing my mates do it as well. I've got a couple of mates that are always like, responding on emotion, and I just watch it and I'm like, this is gonna end so badly, but I kind of like watching it. It's kind of a dick move, but I just like stoke the fire a little bit sometimes and just see them burn at the end and then be like, mate, I told you should not have done that. It's not good. So let's talk about the record label and also the records. Is Boys in a Club the first record?
Yes, it's a soft launch because I said, guys, let's do the label, like the first release with Boys in the Club.
Mm.
But let's just figure everything out.
Yeah.
You know?
It's key.
How are we going to do everything? Mm. No rush. And with this record, we're learning what we need to learn. And then in, I think, September is going to be the first, like, main release.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing.
I always wanted to do a label,
mm.
but I didn't want to do it like without a plan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like just put out a label and then just drop it on Beatport and we'll see what happens. I was like, no, we need a team of guys who really know what they're doing because otherwise it's going to be me sitting in the studio like loading up songs and be like, no, I'm not that. No. Yeah.
So what's the label called?
Dope.
Dope. Ah, that's dope.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
And Boys in the Club is doing really flipping well.
I didn't expect it, Will. I ain't gonna lie. I'm not gonna lie. I've had this record for a year and a half, I think. And every time I would just play in my set as a record in between. Because for me, it's a really simple record.
Yeah.
Like compared to the time that I put in Bombini.
Yeah.
And the time that I put in, you know, for me, it was a simple record. But every time I played it, people were like, yo, that track, Boys in the Club. And I was like, yeah. And what about the other track that I spent 3 weeks on? You know? Yeah. And then with the team, we said, let's do that as a first record. And I'm not going to lie, I did not expect, like, yesterday, even daytime BBC started playing it. And I'm like, all right. You know, as long as things grow organically,
yeah,
I'm okay with it.
I was last night I got in the car and I was going to meet some friends for a pizza, and I got in the car and it was on the record. Annie was playing it, and he was playing it on the radio. I was like, yeah, this is amazing. But I didn't know it was on your label. I didn't know it was the first release on your label. I didn't know what label it was on, but I didn't know it was on your label. And I love the artwork. It's like, it's different.
Oh, thank you.
It's wicked, yeah, man.
I have this friend called Tuan, and with the label, I said, you know what? Even the artwork, I want to do something different. Yeah. I want to have an artist creating something that doesn't look like the other records or labels are doing right now, because with all the respect for all the labels, a lot of times the artwork looks so much the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost a hype.
Yeah.
The artwork. And I was like, no, let's for every song, let's design something special that fits the artist at that present time.
No, I like that a lot. I do like that. When I sat down and planned All We Have Is Now, that was like a key thing for me with the artwork, is like each year is going to be a different theme, although the record label logo is just going to be the center attention of the, like, the artwork. But I really like what you've done with that. It kind of reminds me of like old Motown-y vibes.
Yes, yes, that's exactly what we went for too.
It's sick.
We said it needs to be a bit Motown, soulful, but still edgy, you know, so... Yeah, the guy, he understood the boxes that we saw. Oh, like, you want to do this and this and this.
So are you going to be signing other people on there as well?
Yes, yes, definitely. But at first, it's going to be our own tracks, I think, till the end of the year.
Yeah.
And then beginning of next year, we have some really good releases of artists coming.
Nice.
And, I just want to have artists on there who... try some different kind of stuff, you know, because there's so much good music out there, but the music that's always different is harder to sign. Mm-hmm. You know, I noticed that with my own records and stuff like that. While I think on the dance floor right now, if you have records that are just a bit different than the stuff that everybody's doing, you can get the artist stimulated again to try different stuff, because if the artists are in the studio and they know that when a track sounds different than what everybody else is doing, it's harder to sign.
So hard.
Everybody is going to play the safe play, because then that's the easier way to sign their records.
Well, I think this is like, I've been talking about this a lot to a few people recently, and it's there's two things, right? Record labels, a lot in our industry, in our like very small kind of scene in the grand scheme of things, you have a few record labels that have a specific sound, right?
Yeah.
And every artist knows, especially when you're starting out, I need to sign to these record labels to get DJ to have a career, right?
Yeah.
And that's, for me, my theory behind this is it's lazy A&Ring, and it's lazy promoting for promoters. And I don't want to be disrespectful. There's some amazing A&Rs out there and some amazing promoters out there. But it is creating an industry of the same shit every fucking day.
Listen, We've seen that with so many scenes, you know, and that's where, like, the challenge, I think, right now for house music is to get those guys to sound different, because otherwise you're going to get that problem where everything at a party is going to sound exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, we need the DJs to keep their own ID for the lineup to be like, oh, shit, he's playing. Oh, that sounds different. Mm. Okay, he's playing. Oh, yeah, I know this because his sound is... I think that's what needs to be kept alive.
I totally agree. And the thing is pop music is very interesting because pop music at this moment in time is very formulaic. And it always has been over the years, right? Like, you have different parts of the pop industry and it just happens that they all kind of start sounding the same. And then something else comes along. But I don't go to the like a Rolling Stones concert for them to be playing Beach Boys. I go them to be listening to Rolling Stones. And I go to a Beach Boys concert to watch Beach Boys. So for me, I don't want to sound like Shermanology. I don't want to sound like Jamie Jones. I don't want to sound like anybody else. But the industry is making artists sound like everybody else. Because you have to sign to these record labels that these DJs own. They are they're just morphing all the artists to sound like them, and then it's just one big hodgepodge of, oh, I don't know who this record could be. Anybody's on this record label. It's not a specific person.
That's exactly what's going on. And you know, I think with dope, you know, I think it's that's the challenge. Like, do different stuff, and maybe it won't be the track that goes top 10 straight ahead on Beatport, but I really don't care.
Who gives a fuck, man? Who gives a fuck?
I just want people to be like, yeah, those guys always come with
dope music.
Dope music,
yeah.
You know? So,
well, yeah. I think that's the thing, is there's actually there's two ways to take the business, right? And it goes back to what we were saying right at the beginning about building foundations and kind of taking the slow road and doing what really feels right for you, is because you could quite happily turn your record label into just like a machine, right? You could sign a load of tech house, and when you could put an Instagram out, a tweet out, and kind of put feeders out into the industry, hit your mates up and be like, guys, we're making a record label. This is the sound we want. Send your music in.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or there's the other way, and you could put a release out every week because there's that much music out there. Like, I get emails sent to my record label email. I'm not even asking people to send. I'm not even signing people right now, and I'm still getting records sent. And this sounds awful, and I don't mean this in a horrible way, but it's what people think I want to sign. But it's actually everyone's looking at what's being popular right now, and they're making that music rather than going, this is who I am. This is what I love. This is something a little bit different. Like, it's like everyone trying to copy what's number one on Beatport or what's doing well on the streaming or who's hot right
now. You know what was also a really important thing that for me was quite hard? Like, as you said earlier, that, you know, as artists, you evolve. Mm. You know, you did the Dirty Bird thing first, and then you know? And I compare it to people on the dance floor. Like, 10 years ago, you were dancing to different music than you're dancing on today.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you had an R&B period, you had your techno period, you had your, you know? And I think as an artist, your mind also changes. Mm-hmm. But a lot of audience, like, no, but he's known for that.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he make that anymore? You're like, guys, but same as you.
Mm.
Your mind evolves, your way of thinking evolves, everything changes. So,
yeah,
you know, just make what you feel.
I also think that maybe as artists and people in the industry, I don't actually think it's the people that listen to our music. Maybe it is, but I think it's the people in the industry that actually put us in a box.
Definitely.
Because we all know that, like, America's amazing for it, right? You could have a festival and somebody would be wanting to go and see Seth Troxler, and then they want to go and see Tiesto.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Open-minded in the UK, I don't really know. I've not been touring in the UK that much for like a long time, so it's wrong for me to kind of judge that. But from what I see on social media, it's more so like it's a little less open-minded, but I could be completely wrong. But I think that comes from the industry and the people in the industry is like the record label owners and the promoters, that they're not putting diverse lineups on. They're not signing really interesting music. It's like it has to be the formulaic what we like and what works and what's easy for us to just package up and sell.
Yeah. No, definitely. It's definitely industry people too. More, as you say.
Yeah, 100%.
Hmm.
But I think by doing it the way that you're doing it is... it's a longer game. It's going to take longer to kind of get that.
Yeah.
But once you've got it, it'll be 100% worth it. Dirty Bird did it back in the day. It's kind of a shame to see where... Not that I dislike what Dirty Bird's releasing, but they went through a period of it all sounding the same. And as much as I love them, I would tell Barclay that. Anyway, so it's not like anything I wouldn't say to him. And recently they've been releasing some really different stuff and some really cool shit. But that's what drew me to Dirty Bird back in the day, is that it was everything that they were putting out. You knew it was a Dirty Bird record,
but it wasn't. They had that balance perfectly.
Yeah.
The records didn't sound the same, no. But sonically and how those records sounded, bro, I hated you for your records on Dirty Bird. Bro, I would listen to that shit like, how the hell did he mix that? How?
Well, I didn't. Didn't mix it. That's the thing. I didn't know what mixing was then.
Those records, my God. I think that's my... I ain't gonna lie, I never told you this, but I think your records were the biggest inspiration for me. To be like, okay, you can do something that's totally yours without sounding like anyone else and still be effective on the dance floor. So, man.
Thank you. It means a lot. I guess it's just, oh man, I listened to some of my old Dirty Bird stuff and they're like, what the fuck were you doing, Will? Like, technically it sounds awful, but it worked.
It worked, bro. It worked. I like the mixes, to be honest. Sometimes things were like really loud or in your face, but that's the sound. That was that sound that worked, where like the effects that normal producers would put in the back, like Dirty Bear would put the effect like, in your face. And then, I don't know, I really liked
I really liked it. I actually learned that from one of my my very first manager, actually. And he was like a guy called Pete Gooden. And we had our differences and things like that over the years, but he kind of did mentor me right at the beginning of my career. And he wasn't really a producer. He was a great DJ, like a big long-time resident DJ in Ibiza for Cafe Mambo. But I remember him telling me, he was like, you just have to, like, if you put something in a record, it has to give something. Yeah. It has to be there for a reason. It can't just be a little thing in the background that it sounds all right, but they can barely hear it. Like, put it at the front of the mix. And I've stuck to that every day. That's why I, like, my kicks are so, like, big, but they're not, like, generic techno kicks. It's, like... it actually is done for a reason. Like my snares are like, I put them very high in the mix because I want them to cut through. I think it's really important. If you've got elements in your records that you put them loud. Just put
them loud. Yeah. You know, in the beginning when I was producing, for me it was all like little things in the back. And then I would like fight with the mix
Yeah.
You know, and right now I'm like, yo, if I have 10 elements, but all those 10 elements, I'm going to work that element.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing in there that's not worked. Even a hi-hat, if everything has to sit exactly where I want it to sit.
Yeah.
You know, but that's also time and experience
practice.
And messing around with every plugin you have to get where you want to be.
Yeah, I'm also just super lazy when it comes to like the mix down of it. It's the one thing that I'm not good at, if you know what I mean. No. And I have to work really hard at it to get it good. Especially like we've got a record called Searching coming out. That record took me so long to mix. Like so long to mix. But when you get it, when you hit it, you're like, oh my God, it sounds great.
I mean, I don't do the final mixes of my tracks because I mix during the process and I have it for like 90%.
Yeah.
Like I know like every distortion, everything effect wise and everything is like I do it myself.
Yeah.
And then I have this friend of mine, Alex Salmon, who just does like the last balance and just touch it up like here and there to get some compression extra or, you know, those small details. Because when I sit so much on a record, sometimes I can't be objective anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and then I really want to put the vocal that loud because, no, if you just put it a bit back and just put it over here, people will hear the vocal too, Andy. It's all right. And my biggest struggle is the kick and the bass line because I'm so addicted to the bass line that I put it so loud. And when I get to the club, I'm like, why is the bass line so loud, brother? You can turn it down like 5-6 dB and it's still good.
And it still sounds great. Yeah, it's dangerous, that, isn't it? It's like, it is hard to just like get that back, especially when you're in the studio and it's like a vibe and you're like, oh my God, this sounds amazing. And then you come back to it the day after and you're like, well, what the fuck were you thinking?
you know how many times I take shit away from Instagram, like in the moment and I pull like, working on this track. And then I go and play some PlayStation, look back on my phone, listen to it. Please take the shit off your Instagram and shit sound like shit.
Yeah, definitely, man. I feel you with that. It's funny. But so you go to somebody else to finish the mixes. Do you find the like extra 5% really like makes a difference?
For the crowd it doesn't.
Yeah. But for you.
But it's for me.
Yeah.
Because it really doesn't matter. Sometimes I even in sets play the old wrong version and the crowd really doesn't know.
Yeah.
You know, like if like some guys don't mix their track and then send it to an engineer and then they get a totally different track back. With me, it's just loudness.
Yeah.
That I get my track back a bit louder and some cuts of the EQ. So some things cut through a bit more.
Yeah.
But it's always the same mix as I did, like level wise. It's only like cleaning it up. But sonically, it's, I do it for 80, 90%.
Yeah, man. No, I'm with what I do is I speak to my master and engineer and kind of be like, what do you think of this? And then he gives me a few pointers and then I go back and change it. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I needed.
Bro, and I'm working on like the similar structure because I have this guy, I forgot his name. He mixes everything for Solar and for
Andy.
Our Creations, I think it's AMPM.
Yeah, PM. Andy. That's who I use.
Oh, Andy. Bro, listen. I got this mix. I got this master back because he mastered Boys in the Club.
Yeah.
But then he mailed me back like, yo, if you take away from the kick a few frequencies and just push over here. And then I was like, yo, this is the kind of engineer I need.
Yeah.
Because other engineers take your shitty premix, master it, send it back and be like,
Give me my money.
Bitches. And when he came back with pointers, I was like, you are the man I need.
That's who I use. He's the best.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Now tell him I said hi.
I will. He's the best, man. He's quick. But yeah, he also mixes down stuff as well. He does mix down stuff if you want him to. You can do stems or you can do just like, yes, stem mastering or stem mixing.
Okay.
He's great. I've worked with a guy called Steve Dubs before. who is a master in engine, a mixer engineer. He's like the silent partner of Chemical Brothers.
Mm.
And very old school mix guy, like runs everything through an SSL desk, like super, super old school. But even going through that process with him and working on a record with him was just like being in the room and just being like, okay, this is how it is. And I think that's what I want to do eventually is I want to get a desk and then mix after and run everything through the desk and kind of go like use the sliders and then have, because a lot of those desks have built-in compressions and things
bro,
like that.
Bro, listen, you are where I am. Listen, this is the list of my desk and everything that I want to go get. I'm telling you, this, I'm at exactly the same place, bro, because once you have everything set out,
yeah,
and you can, listen, I think that's going to make such a difference
100%.
In, you know, instead of in the box, it's good. But certain things you need to try. Mm. And if it doesn't work out, I'll go back to the box.
Yeah.
But for now, like the first thing that I bought was the machine from Native.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And my drums sound so, I mean, I balance it out because you don't want only clean sounds because then your track becomes too clean.
Mm-hmm.
But when I mix the samples with the machine stuff.
Yeah.
I've never had, sometimes I get a kick out of this thing and I'm like, yo, I don't need to do anything with this kick because I'm used when I take a kick from a sample pack or whatever, I need to compress and I need to do loads of things to get that fatness.
Yeah.
While in here, you're like, bro, if this is one tool, if I have like, let's start with 6-3 each side, bro, your sound is going to have such a different dimension.
Yeah.
And I've been competing sonically with guys who have analog gear.
Yeah.
And the battle is not fair. Sometimes, listen, sometimes you hit in something like in a keyboard or like whatever, and it sounds good.
Mm.
But I know that when you press something on that Moog over there, bro, the way that bass line has.
Yeah. It's so weird because I think there's two parts to it. And like, I have pretty much done most of my stuff in the box, my whole career, and still is. Most of my stuff is in the box, apart from a few, like my like drums, my like hats are all, majority of the time, my hats are all drum machine stuff. And I don't know what it is, but you can get in the box to sound as good as analog. However, it's a process.
That's it.
And the process actually slows down
creativity
kind of flow. But also, hardware gives us a limit. Because once you've recorded that take, you can't get that take again. And once you've turned off your synths, you can't get that sound exactly how you got it again. And I think that's the amazing thing, is that it actually stops you overthinking, or it stops me overthinking things and being like, oh, this could be better. Let's tweak this. Let's tweak that. No, I've recorded the take. I can't do anything else about it now.
You have to commit at an early stage.
Yeah. And I think that's really key. And it goes back in the day before there was computers and like in house and techno at the beginning. And it's that simplicity of records, like the Marshall Jefferson, some of his records, like just all Frankie Knuckles, all these old school records that just hit hard, like Green Velvet. Like none of this stuff was like, it was literally written with a drum machine and a synth, and that's it. And I think having limitations in the studio and giving yourself limitations and being like, no, this is what I'm going to write the record on today, and you're going to come up with an absolute banger because it has to be so simple. And I think what happens with software is that you like I'm working with somebody at the moment, and she's musically she's unreal, absolutely unreal, but her sessions are just fucking full of so much shit. And it's a lot of the time it's just be like, okay, let's strip it back to the original, strip it back to that bass line, that melody, the keys, and let's just build something super simple. And the minute you strip it back, you're like, oh wow, it's got space, it's got mm-hmm. place to move and breathe. And that's yeah. what hardware gives me and allows me to do, is just like simplicity.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So that's, I think it's going to be the goal.
What's on your list? I want to know.
I got the... there's some modular stuff.
Oh, like man, that's dangerous.
The Erica Synth bass line, the Mod Bass, Soundforce 909. I want to get the... where is it now? The Arturia Poly Brute, like the big synth.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy sounds. The Arturia B-Step.
Mm-hmm.
Erica Drum Modulator. So a lot of, like, modules and synths. And the desk. What's the desk called again? Where is it now? Oh, it's not even on here. Shit. It's going to cost even more. I thought the desk was in there.
Dude, the desk is so expensive.
What's the name of the desk that I wanted to get again? Wait, let me look for it.
I've been looking at desks recently, and I'm like, oh shit, I need to earn some more money. I need to earn a whole lot more money before I can get a desk.
What kind of desk do you have in mind?
I want to get an API or an SSL.
Oh, okay, yes, you're going that league. I get you now, yes. Yes, yes.
There's an API that's like 15 grand. That's like a small, I think it's like 16 channels. And I'm like, that could work. That could be nice. But I want to like set it up. Like, I don't want to have, I want the mixing process to be separate to the producing. So I kind of want like my mixing setup, like my producing setup here, and then my mixing setup behind me. So I like bounce the stems out and then run everything through like a whole new system, and just kind of take the whole, because I really dislike it when you see like in studios and you just got the like the laptop on the desk, and it's just like, come on, man. Like,
man. Oh, man, you can. When we went to L.A., to work on some different pop albums, and you guys would come in, have the whole SSL desk,
yeah,
and take like the plastic thing, put it on top to put the laptop.
Exactly.
Listen, we were in the studio for 3 months. He didn't turn on the SSL once.
Exactly.
Bro, I was like, bro.
It's just like, dude, just send your drums through it. Like, send everything through it, and it's gonna sound a little bit different. It's just gonna sound different, and you can just mm-hmm. tell. But that's kind of what I want to do, is I want, or maybe like have something on the set on the side, so I can run everything through it, and then like even just run my synths through it as it's coming back in. It's kind of going to give it a little bit more. But yeah, that's long term goals, man. Long term.
Yeah,
goals.
Man, let's get it. It's a long journey. So let's go for the long term.
The one thing I would say is on your drum machines. Let me send you some links to the drum machines that are ridiculous.
I like that.
Because the 909s and all of that are great. But the samples are so good out there of the 909s and everything like that. I personally wouldn't get one. I got the 808, the TR-808 thing. And it's great. It's amazing. But Roland have done the Roland Cloud, and they do a 808 on there. And I'm just like, well, I don't... They do the 909, they do all of that. So I'm like, I can get all the sounds that... Yeah, it's not analog, and but it's easy. It's so easy. But I've got this AVP ADS-7 Mark II. And it's like... see if you can see it. It's that thing here. It's a beast. But also the Tansbar Light... MFB Tans Bar. They've got a bigger one. That's a small one. I could only afford the small one when I first got it. But the MFB Tans Bar is beautiful, and it's like unreal, and it's German. It's so okay. German.
Yeah, you know what the thing is with the drum machines, and I'm trying to figure certain things out because at the moment I draw everything like groove wise, yeah, and like I just mess up all my samples and mess with the groove and just, you know, so yeah, with a drum computer, everything is a bit more
on it.
Yeah. I mean, you have your grooves and stuff, but you can't move it like, I mean, you can, but I'm so used to samples, moving it around, mm-hmm, reverse here, you know, that creativity. And with a drum machine, you are more like, okay, we set it here. Here are the claps. Here are the, you can still move it around, but I have to find a way to implement that with, you know, our sound. But
so what I do is I will record it in. I'll record each individual sound in.
And then
use it as a sample. So I'm getting the hardware sound, but then I'm using it as a sample.
Yeah, that's exactly how I'm doing it with the machine to bounce it in there, and then
It's so much better. But on all these drum machines, there's like swings and kind of shuffles and stuff like that.
Send me the links, brother. I'm going to check that out.
I'll send you the links. Man, we've just done an hour and 10 minutes.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I know. It's fucking flown by. And I would say we can keep going, but I've got to bake some bread.
All good.
Before we go, how can people follow you, listen to the new single, send you music for the record label? Like, tell the people.
Yeah, just we're setting everything up for the label, like the emails and everything. But check us out, like Shermanology on Instagram, Spotify, Beatport. And yeah, a lot of new things coming. So let's roll it out.
Legend, man. Thank you for being on. Also, thanks for being the best. I've loved working with you over the last like couple of years, man. It's the best.
Same here, bro. And so relaxed. Yeah, no stress. Just
apart from fucking keyboard players. That's an inside joke no one's ever gonna get, so sorry. But yeah, dude, thank you. And I really cannot wait for this music to come out,
bro,
and people to hear it. It's like,
listen, these two songs that we have, I'm gonna be pumping them through the summer.
I can't wait, man. I really can't wait. And when they're out, come back on and let's have a conversation about the process and kind of talk about that. And let's get Dorothy on as well. It'd be great.
Yes, next time. Well, it was my mistake because when you told me the time, I thought it was UK time. So I told Dorothy, oh, if you're here around 12, like Dutch time, they're like, oh, yeah. And I messed it up. I told, yeah, you can come, but just for the closing, maybe. So next time.
Yeah, man, definitely. You're always welcome and keep safe. And hopefully I can get out to Amsterdam and see you guys as well.
Sounds good, my brother.
Keep safe, man. Love you, dude. Take care.
Peace.
And that is a wrap. Loved it. I hope you enjoyed it. Please subscribe. Please share. Please comment. Keeps the stories coming in. It's the only way this podcast keeps going. Keep safe. Have the best week. See you soon.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.